Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. The melody.
Welcome to Subtle Beast, everybody. I am your host, Foltz. With me, as always, my main man and co-host, Mr. Steve Apostolopoulos. How are you this evening, my friend?
I'm doing good, Foltz. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Some exciting things going on in the world that definitely have to be discussed here tonight because they're in the realm of Subtle Beast, and it seems like we have ourselves what's going on right now, a real-life conspiracy theory, which I don't even know if we necessarily need to call it a conspiracy theory at this time, because I'm not sure that there's really anybody on this planet that believes the official story of Jeffrey Epstein.
Right, Jeffrey Epstein.
He was arrested on federal charges. He was brought in. He was giving names of other elite that were committing these federal crimes.
Supposedly had a black book.
Yeah, really good friends with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton flew on his private plane 26 times. That's a lot of times. I've never flown with my wife 26 times. But yeah, he was in prison, supposedly, quote unquote, on suicide watch, which the books that indicating if it's everything's being done, if everything's being checked on by the guards, everything was written in there that they had been checked on. But of course, they went to the cameras and he had never been checked on. I mean, the warden of that prison has been fired and dismissed. There's just a lot of shady business going on. And, you know, a lot of people point the fingers at the Clintons. And there has to be a lot of truth to it, because, and again, backing up, I mean, to be on the guy's plane 26 times, I mean, that's a lot for even, like, you know, like a business associate, I would think. But another thing is, when the FBI raided Epstein's house, they found this portrait that was painted of Bill Clinton wearing red shoes with a blue dress, like with his legs crossed, with, like, I don't know, like if his finger pointing forward or something like that. It's the most ridiculous thing. And then supposedly on top of that, there was a mannequin that I guess was the same way, posed the same way, or looked like Bill Clinton, but they only got pictures of the artwork.
Oh, I didn't hear about the mannequin.
Yeah.
I saw the artwork.
Yeah, I mean, I read about the mannequin, but they had said that they had no photographs of it. But yeah, they caught that image when the FBI was going in there. It's pretty crazy. I mean, think, if he was about to spill the beans on the top elite in the world that are intertwined in these, you know, crimes, I think that they got to him. Because even the autopsy that was done saying that the vertebrae in his neck that were broken aren't consistent with a prison hanging. They're more consistent with homicides.
Right. It's not like he's fallen from the gallows.
Right.
In a cell.
Right. And, you know, shortly after that, Anonymous came out with something, and I'm just going to read what they had to say real quick. Said, not saying anything after this, so please do not inbox me. But late last night, after 0415 count, they took him in medical in a wheelchair, front cuffed, but not one triage nurse says that they spoke to him. Next thing we know, a trip van shows up. We do not do releases on the weekends unless the judge orders it. Next thing we know, he's put in a single man cell and hangs himself. Here's the thing. The trip van did not sign in, and we did not record the plate number, and a guy in green military outfit was in the back of the van, according to the tower guy who let him through the gate. So there we have. Now, how credible that is, I'm not sure, but, I mean, something's going on, and to the point where President Trump believes that it needs a full investigation.
Yeah, it is. It's under full investigation currently.
I think that if anybody that was involved in any of this ring, they better either, I don't know. I don't know where you can go. I mean, we're getting, it's going to be exposed.
Yeah, I would think that the majority of the people in that ring will be exposed.
Yeah, well, I mean, what happens in darkness will come to light. So, now, saying all that between, you know, we could talk about that all the evening because it's really interesting. But we'll see how this plays out in the future. But because that people believe that, you know, we'll say the Clintons have this secret coup of people working for them that can come in and whack you when you're in federal prison. I mean, that's some serious power. And most people say, you know, well, how did people in government, you know, over time obtain that power? Well, that's kind of what we're going to tie into our podcast tonight and talk about. Where did the power originally start from? Where are the brains behind operations that pull things together? What's the secretism? What's the compartmentalism all about? And it goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War and George Washington. And it's going to be what we cover tonight with the Culper Ring. So, Steve, why don't you kick us off tonight?
Absolutely. The Culper Ring. The revolutionary spies who helped win the war. I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country. So wrote 21-year-old Nathan Hale before being hanged for espionage by the British on September 22nd of 1776. Hale had originally been encouraged to join the revolution by an old Yale classmate, Benjamin Talmadge. 2 years after Hale's death, Talmadge would honor his legacy in the creation of the Culper Spy Ring, a group of intelligence operatives who helped change the course of the American Revolution. So Talmadge and Hale had been close during the time at Yale and often exchanged letters. 3 years after graduation, Talmadge wrote to Hale, newly an officer in the American forces, saying, "Was I in your condition, I think the more extensive service would be my choice. Our holy religion, the honor of God, a glorious country, and a happy constitution is what we have to defend." Hale agreed with Talmadge's sentiment and soon accepted an assignment to do more than just fight. He would spy from behind enemy lines. Although Hale's venture into espionage ended poorly, Talmadge's revolutionary feelings did not subside. Soon he would find himself at the center of the American Revolution's most important spy ring. The Culper Ring, founded and supervised by Talmadge, operated from late October in 1778 until the British evacuated New York in 1783. Although the ring was active for all 5 years, its most productive period was between 1778 and 1781. Now, after Talmadge brought the ring together, it was led by Abraham Woodhill and Robert Townsend, codenamed Samuel Culper Sr. and Samuel Culper Jr., respectively. The codename Culper came straight from George Washington himself, a slight alteration of Culpeper County, Virginia, where Washington had worked as a survey in his youth.
So, this is crazy because this is not anything that you would learn in your typical history class. I don't recall ever hearing about the Culper Ring until getting into the realms of the unknown. But, yeah, it's interesting to know. So let's find out some more. The ring was highly sophisticated, using methods still familiar today. Couriers, invisible ink, and dead drops were the norm. Some messages were hidden in plain sight, coded within newspaper advertisements and personal messages. Supposedly, one woman, Anna Strong, was even able to use the clothes hung out to dry to send messages to other members of the ring. Codes and ciphers were standard practice. These methods enabled agents to send Talmadge seemingly innocent letters. Talmadge could pick out individual words to decode the messages. Now, while Woodhill and Towson ran the show, many agents, couriers, and sub-agents were also involved. Caleb Brewster, Austin Rowe, Anna Strong, and the still unidentified Agent 355 all played vital roles. Other members included Hercules Mulligan and his slave, Cato. Mulligan warned in January 1779 of British plans to kidnap or kill senior American leaders, including Washington himself. Cato delivered the vital message. Other agents included Joseph Lawrence, Nathan Woodhill, Abraham's cousin, Nathan Ruggles, William Robinson, and James Rivington.
It kills me that they have all their names except for Agent 355 is unidentified still.
Yeah, so anybody that knew who that guy, they must have just taken that to the grave.
That's amazing.
And there must have only been maybe one or two people that must have known, because that probably would have leaked otherwise, I would think.
They must have done a fantastic job at their anonymity if you could go the whole way through and still be Agent 355 at the end.
Well, it was so solid that the ring security, its existence, it remained unconfirmed until the 20th century, that even Washington himself couldn't identify every culprit spy. So its strict security preserved both the ring and the lives of individual members, boosting their confidence in themselves and in each other. Now, the culprit ring successes, what spies call coups, were many. They warned of surprise attack on newly arrived French troops at Newport, Rhode Island. The forces, properly warned, were able to foil British plans to devastate their men while they recovered from their transatlantic voyage. The culprit spies uncovered British plans to destroy America's new economy by forging huge amount of continental dollars. Continental dollars were soon withdrawn from circulation and replaced with coins by 1783. Without the culprit ring, Washington may have fallen for a raiding operation meant to divide his forces. In 1779, General William Tryon raided three main ports of Connecticut, destroying homes, goods in storage, and a number of public buildings. Now, Tryon was attempting to split off a portion of Washington's forces to allow British forces to rout the Americans. But Washington did not ride out to meet Tryon. Instead, Tryon's forces rampaged through civilian land, and the general was criticized by both American rebels and those who supported the British as barbarous. Now, by far, the culprit ring's most important coup was exposing General Benedict Arnold. Arnold, whose name has entered the American lexicon as a metonym for treachery, was in contact with British spy Major John Andre and planned to surrender West Point to the British. The culprit ring warned Talmadge of a high-ranking American traitor, but lacked his identity. Talmadge identified Arnold when Andre was captured and later hanged for treason. Now, though Arnold escaped with his life, West Point remained safe from the British. Pretty crazy. So I'm sure people have heard throughout time if someone's a traitor, you know, a backstabber, like, oh, you're a Benedict Arnold. Well, that's where this is coming from, you know.
It goes all the way back to an American that gave the British intelligence against us and almost cost us our freedom.
Right, exactly.
But because Washington had these spies, the spies found him out and were able to point him out in time for us to save. The West Point was a huge port in New York, and that was one of the last places that we had a good stronghold. So if we would have lost that, it would have been a different outcome of the war.
Exactly. Now, Abraham Woodhill's sister, Mary, is sometimes credited with exposing Major Andre and thus Benedict Arnold. Andre, whose alias John Anderson, fled when he realized that he was under suspicion. Now, unlike the culprit ring, Andre's security was lax. That cost Andre his life, Arnold his reputation, and ultimately held cost the British Empire its American colony. Stopped by three soldiers, Andre first tried to bribe them to let him go. Instead of taking the bribe, the soldier, now actively suspicious rather than idly curious, searched him and found incriminating papers. The letters proved conclusively that Andre was a British spy. The information contained in Andre's letters was almost useless to the British. Their commander, General Clinton, already had it. They were, however, extremely invaluable to Talmadge. So now he's captured. We're not getting the messages that we could possibly need to help take over the course of the war. But I digress. Steve,
So Andre captured messages. Andre's captured messages were in Benedict Arnold's handwriting. So that's how they got tripped up, making it suddenly clear who was leaking high-level information. Benedict Arnold fled for his life, going to England, then afterwards to Canada. After alienating a number of his business partners in New Brunswick, Arnold returned to England. Andre was not so lucky. He did not escape the American forces. He would make a useful reprisal for the hanging of Talmadge's dear friend, Nathan Hale. Caught dead to rights by the Culper Ring, Andre would soon be dead, period.
Wow.
So they exposed Benedict Arnold and Andre.
Yep.
Hale had been hanged on September 22nd of 1776 at the tender age of 21. He died bravely with composure, courage, and dignity. Andre faced the gallows equally bravely on October 2nd of 1780. Before his death, he received a visitor. It was Colonel Talmadge. The two spent part of their time together talking. At one point, Andre asked Talmadge whether his capture and Hale's capture were similar. Talmadge, remembering his dead friend and perhaps feeling guilty at encouraging him to take a more active role in the Revolutionary War, he replied, "Yes, precisely similar, and similar shall be your fate." The British evacuated New York in mid-August of 1783. On November 16th of the same year, Washington himself visited to mark the 7th anniversary of the American retreat from Manhattan. While there, he met someone whom he and his new nation owed a personal and national debt, Culper agent Hercules Mulligan.
Crazy.
Cato's.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, throughout the war, the Culper Ring made sketches of fortifications and reported on ship arrivals and departures, troop activities, strength, positions, and morale, and the status of British supplies. Now, most of the intelligence was gathered in New York City from Towson's Tavern and dry goods stores or from Mulligan's Tailor Shop, both of which were popular locations for British soldiers to gather. The Culper Ring was the most professional of Washington's espionage networks. Although Talmadge was its manager, Washington himself regularly tasked the agents with very specific instructions, including techniques to be used to conceal their espionage activities to protect themselves. Washington had learned the importance of concealment and personal protection for his intelligent agents through the loss of Hale, an enthusiastic but completely untrained amateur spy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The Culper Ring employed several methods of spycraft in its operations. In addition to providing its agents with code names, Talmadge devised a cipher system for this intelligent reports. Key words and terms were encoded as three-digit number based upon their position in John Entwick's The New Spelling Dictionary, a popular work of the day. These reports were also written with invisible ink that required a special chemical compound to be brushed over it to reveal the writing. Moreover, the reports were frequently embedded in letters addressed to notorious Tory sympathizers on Long Island as an additional step to prevent their seizure by British troops inspecting material carried by Culper agents. The Culper Ring reports were conveyed by a chain of agents as they conducted their normal daily activities rather than on special unusual trips. Towson gave his reports to Rowe when Rowe visited the dry goods store to purchase supplies for the tavern on Long Island. Rowe then carried the reports east across Long Island to Woodhill's Setauket Farm. Next, Brewster and his whaleboat crews rowed the messages across the Long Island Sound to the Connecticut shore to a specific location, which according to many accounts was indicated by Strong by the number of handkerchiefs hung on her laundry line on New York side. Now, Talmadge then would meet Brewster, and upon receiving the reports, ride west through Connecticut and New York to Washington's headquarters in Morristown, New Jersey. Now, while this process protected the agents, it slowed down the transmission of intelligence, as when reports of impending British raid on the headquarters of Talmadge's unit, the second of the people arrived after the raid and captured the intelligence reports and operational funds locked in Talmadge's personal trunk at the scene. One of the ring's most important contributions to the war effort was the intelligence that saved recently arrived French troops from potential disaster. Towson learned that the British General Sir Henry Clinton was preparing some 8,000 troops to attack the French force of approximately 5,800 troops under General Jean-Baptiste Donatien de Vimier-Comte Rochambeau.
Yes.
That had just arrived at Newport, Rhode Island on July 11th, 1780. After 3 months at sea, worn out and sick from the voyage, the French troops likely would have been no match for Clinton's battle-hardened force. Towson hid his report on Clinton's plans in a letter to a well-known Long Island loyalist, which Rowe transported past the sentries around New York City. It was delivered to Washington's headquarters in Morristown on July 21st. Upon receiving the report, Washington led his troops across the Hudson River and marched towards Manhattan. Learning of Washington's advance, Clinton returned with his troops to secure New York City, leaving Rochambeau free to rest and refit his troops. Now, for most of the war, the Culper Ring kept Washington abreast of the British position in New York City and enabled him to make informed plans. As a result, the American Revolution owed many of its successes to the intelligence reported by the Ring.
That's a good one, man.
It really is, because you learn in history class of what took place, the war. I mean, I don't even really recall learning in elementary or even in later history classes that George Washington was originally on the British, was a British soldier. I didn't learn that, I don't believe, until later in life.
Right, and the use of invisible ink that long ago, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they had all kinds of tactics.
It seems like the information went through a lot of, like, a huge process. You know, they're using whale boats, and this guy who's going to the city to get stuff for his tavern that's out on the island, on Long Island. Like, it just, the information transferred so slowly. We're not used to that.
Well, it reminds me a lot of today's, like, deep state, the way that they keep everything compartmentalized. All you need to know is what your role is, because if you know too much, something's going to go wrong. It's going to get messed up. You just keep doing what you're doing. When I give you this, you take it here. Don't ask any questions. Everyone else is doing their part.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what a dead drop is, but it sounds like the two people don't even see each other.
Right.
So these people didn't even know who was in the ring with them.
And that's how it was able to be kept a secret for so long. I mean, we didn't find out about it until the 19th century. I mean, in the last thing that we were just discussing, they were talking about the tactics that Washington taught them. I mean, it'd be great if we knew what some of those tactics were, but we only just know that this came up in, like, the later part of history.
Check out some more of this stuff here. So Agent 355, a vital character in the DC series Why the Last Man, claims to be a member of, and if you don't know, DC is a comic book, so these are the comic book series Why the Last Man, claims to be a member of the clandestine and centuries-old spy organization called the Culper Ring. And it turns out there really was such an organization, and it began in the 18th century under the orders of George Washington. And there even was a real-life Agent 355. George Washington knew the value of quality military intelligence. The first president had served as a British colonial spy in 1753. Washington surveyed the Ohio Territory during his time, gathering information about the French military presence and troop movements in the area. Thanks to a first-hand knowledge of the value of military intelligence, Washington allotted a considerable amount of money, over 10% of the total armed forces budget during the Revolutionary War, to establishing intelligence networks. General Washington tasked one of his most trusted officers, Major Benjamin Talmadge, with forming this early intelligence community.
the real Agent 355. Now, while fictional Agent 355 exists within the pages of Why, the DC comic, The Last Man, and claims to be a member of the extended Culper ring, there was a real-life Agent 355 in the Culper ring. A number of members identified themselves via numerical cipher, with George Washington taking 711, while 355 belonged to a member by the name of Lady. Nobody knows the exact identity of Agent 355, but historians believe that Agent 355 to be a member of a wealthy British family. She made use of her lofty position and social standing to obtain information. Agent 355 probably died in the hands of British by hanging. And Agent 355 wasn't the only female spy. Nancy, Anna Strong, also aided the Culper ring, directing the members to safe meeting locations. Nancy accomplished this task by arranging laundry on a clothesline to form a numerical code corresponding with local docks. British infantry captured Anna Strong's husband early in the Revolutionary War, but she secretly supplied and gave supplies and food to him aboard a prison ship, likely saving her husband's life. So we don't even have... Everybody was collaborating here with the Culper ring.
All, even the females, they were doing everything they could, hanging handkerchiefs on their wash lines. This 355 agent, that's very intriguing.
I think that's crazy. I mean, she was hanging laundry on her to correspond with different docks. And
right.
I mean, it's crazy.
They're saying that it was by the number. I would think it'd be by the color. Like, if it was a dark or a light, you know.
Who knows?
But that's crazy that they would do that.
It really is.
It's really going down to, like, the essence of society, where if you're thinking you want to win this war so bad that you're using every man, woman, and child you can.
Hey, that's right.
Really cool.
It is.
So George Washington paid the new nation's first spies out of his own pocket. Here he studies a map with Nathan Hale, who volunteered to gather intelligence behind British lines. He was soon captured and hanged. Here's a picture right there, folks.
I see that.
The letter that won the American Revolution. In 1777, George Washington faced a losing war. Then he created America's first espionage operation. So in 1777, the American colonies were badly losing their fight for independence from Great Britain. The British Army had captured New York City's crucial port. Expecting further advances, the Continental Congress was evacuated from Philadelphia. It seemed that the war was lost. And, you know, that's another thing. You never realize how close you were to losing that one.
Really close.
So then George Washington, then commander-in-chief of the Continental Army, wrote a letter that changed the course of the war. Washington was desperate to discover what was happening inside New York, but military scouts couldn't even get close. So the general needed someone to penetrate enemy lines. But when he asked for volunteers, a few of his troops raised their hands. Spying wasn't seen as gentlemanly, says Vince Houghton, resident historian and international spy museum in Washington, D.C. George Washington dabbled in espionage when, as a 21-year-old, he spied on the French in the Ohio Territories. One of the things he did particularly well was to exploit the social environment of drinking sessions and meals with French officers to acquire useful intelligence, notes a CIA report. That's pretty cool.
That is really, really cool. Now, finally, a young army captain named Nathan Hale volunteered for the first dangerous assignment. He was caught a week later and hanged, the first known American spy to be executed on the job. He's memorialized with a statue outside of the CIA headquarters. Washington realized that the mission was too big for an untrained volunteer, so he set about building an espionage organization. John Jay, later the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, had been running counterintelligence as the head of New York State Committee and Commission for Detecting and Defeating Conspiracies. One of Jay's operatives, a merchant named Nathan Sackett, had experience in secret writing and codes. In February 1977, Washington wrote a letter to Sackett in which he offered him $50 a month out of his own pocket to establish the first former apparatus for the advantage of obtaining the earliest and best intelligence of the designs of the enemy. Without the organization that Sackett set up, it would have been very difficult for us to win the war, says Houghton. We had a ragtag army, and the British had the greatest army, greatest navy, greatest economy in the world. We had no real business winning this war. But America's spy services got off to an inglorious start. Most of Sackett's agents failed at their jobs, including Sackett himself, who was fired after just 6 months. Fortunately for the infant nation, Sackett's replacement, 26-year-old Benjamin Talmadge, created what is considered one of America's greatest espionage operations, the Culper Spy Ring. Comprised of childhood friends from Long Island, the group included a shop owner inside New York City who gathered information, a traveling trader who smuggled it out of the city, and a whaleboat captain who delivered it to Washington's camp. Benjamin Talmadge took over the role of spy master for George Washington during the war. Later, he served 8 terms in the House of Representatives. Also, employing the tools and tricks of the 18th century spy trade, hiding secret messages in hollow feather quills, using dead drops to transport letters, the Culper operatives unmasked enemy spies, busted a money counterfeiting plan, and stopped the British from sabotaging a French aid mission to the colonies. Now, after important letters were lost during an enemy raid, Talmadge invented a numerical dictionary code that matched 763 cities, names and words to numbers. Washington's code name was Agent 711, as we said earlier. Washington also asked physician James Jay, brother to John, to invent an invisible ink that could be revealed only with another chemical and would relieve the fears of such persons as being entrusted in its conveyance. Washington's espionage experiment paid off. In 1781, the British surrendered, thanks in part to the intelligence gathered by the Culper Ring and their networks. Washington didn't really get out of the fight. Washington didn't really outfight the British. He simply outspied us, a British intelligence officer allegedly said after the war. None of the Culper spies were ever caught, and even Washington himself never learned exactly who was in the group. The ring's very existence wasn't discovered until the 1900s, and to this day, no one knows for certain how many members it had. And after the war, Washington asked Congress to reimburse him $17,000, nearly $500,000 today, for his espionage expenses. And guess what? The lawmakers obliged. That's incredible.
It is. And you know, nowadays, spying occurs digitally.
Yeah.
It's a lost art, really.
It is, but I mean, I think we've just taken the tactics that have gone from way back then and just applied them to the technology that we have today. I mean, spying has become so very easy for something just as much as, you know, trying to get your dollars into, you know, the pockets of different merchants. I was just recently out west, and I was driving by a billboard that I took a picture of, and it was for some beef jerky. And I love beef jerky, and I hadn't seen it before. Took a picture of it, and that was it. Later on that night, just looking through social media, wouldn't you know, there's an advertisement for this beef jerky that I'd never heard before, just from a picture that I've taken. So, yeah, spying has been definitely going on for a long time, but it's definitely gotten a lot more sophisticated, if you will.
Are you a James Bond fan?
Oh, big time.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of James Bond movies.
I'm big Roger Moore. He's my favorite, I think.
Not a Sean Connery.
I like Connery, but you know what? Roger Moore was more during the 80s. And, you know, watching 007 with my dad, he was more the childhood Bond that I knew.
You're right. You're right. He was. And then very short-lived Timothy Dalton in there.
Very, very short. Yeah. But yeah, I loved Octopussy. That's probably one of my favorite Bond movies.
Right on, man. Yes. So those are, that's kind of like, I would say the apex, or like the most popular time of the spy, because it was a not as technologically advanced time as it is now, where he had, you know, old 35 millimeter, like,
it's very hands-on
cameras, right? To get information, you had to get people into these crazy areas. And it's cool to hear that Washington was able to adapt people to being spies the way that he did. I really never pictured that in the Revolutionary War. To me, it was just lines of you know, men facing each other in a field and shooting rifles or muskets at each other. But I mean, there was a lot more to it than that.
But that's also what we're learning throughout our lives as we're getting older, that that's never just what it is. People out on the battlefield fighting over whatever. We're told that the wars that our troops represent us in are for our freedom, and that is in no way a slam. Thank God for our troops, and thank God that they do protect us. But that's not the real reason that they tell us, you know, in the news per se, that, oh, you know, Operation Freedom. Yeah, Operation to free all the oil from that company and get whatever, like, I don't know, technology that you've just discovered that you don't believe anybody else should have besides the United States. But yeah,
I definitely didn't like the title of Operation Freedom. It made it sound like the war was too rah-rah.
Yeah, and it was like, it's too open-ended. Well, who are we freeing? Is it more freedom for us, or is it Operation Freedom for them? Are we freeing them? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it was a confusing time. There's a lot of American wars that were kind of open-ended like that.
Yeah, and what people don't understand, too, is to this day, I mean, goes hand in hand with spying now. A good way of spying on people now is just suppressing information. Like, we're still dropping bombs over in the Gulf, like, almost every day. I was talking to some guys who know some of their brothers are deployed over there, and they're just like, yeah, we're still dropping bombs like every day. It's a real war zone still going on. But we're not led to believe that.
No, I wouldn't think the general public would know anything about that.
So there's a way that they can spy on the American people. Let's not tell them what's going on over there and see how they react. If they think the war's over, let's just see how they calm down. Maybe we can get a little more time to go by, and then we can get some other propaganda going for the next war. Who knows?
Pacify the mob.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, so it just goes to show, I mean, the depths that our government has gone to. Not just in recent day, but in the past. Now, in the past, it was for a good thing to, you know, overthrow oppression. But if you look at, you know, throughout history, it's been stated that, you know, as early as Thomas Jefferson, that he was one of the first members of the Illuminati. So here we go. We go back with George Washington being the first person, or, you know, and ended up being the first president of the United States, which is interesting because we set a rule that if you're not originally from America, that you couldn't be president. But I guess nobody was really friend except for the Native Americans. So
Navajo.
Yeah. Yeah, the Navajo. yeah, it's just interesting to see how far back it goes. I mean, he was the original starting the coups and, you know, and this and that, and the whisperers around, and, you know, which today is like some of the lobbyists and the, you know, the creepy guys that are cutting the side deals, like the Clinton 26 times on the plane.
And the Culper Ring is kind of like the spies were winning this war for us behind closed doors. Yeah, there's a bunch of troops out there, but the decisions that Washington made from the information that he got, not to split his troops, to get rid of Benedict Arnold when he did, all of those things made it so much better and so much easier for him to win. And it's still happening. Those backdoor deals, these little pieces of information that people with, I guess, like, privilege get and others don't, they make it a lot easier for government still.
Sure. I mean, if you just look at some of the, what people are being paid in Congress, I hear like a stat recently that Nancy Pelosi or some, like, $40 million. Where did that money come from? Because we can track how much she's been paid. Now, she's paid really well, probably almost $250,000 a year. But to acquire, she's been in office, what, 30 years? To acquire $40 million? There's some side deals going down. There's some coups going down. There's some spying going on. What can we get over on the Republican Party? What can we get over in the Democratic Party? It's just...
There's some extra information that she has that we don't.
Yeah, and what's crazy is that we're not using these secret coups and these power to spy on other countries. We're just doing it within. And it's just, and not just on the congressional level, but just within the CIA and the NSA and the FBI, just how we're, you know, we're being monitored. People like to say, oh, well, we're not being spied on all the time. We're watched closely. We're really watched closely. I mean, I'm sure anytime somebody says Russia on a telephone call or Clinton or not Clinton or, oh God, definitely Clinton. or if they mention Trump and Russia or Putin in the same sentence, I'm sure that that's picked up on some algorithm of some sort, some type of spying technology.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that the spying network is now digital. It's a completely different type of spying because most of it is already occurring in our country. Most of the money in the world comes from the United States. Most of the GDP of the world comes from the United States. So they're now finding ways to spy on themselves, spy on their own people. The NSA is listening to phone calls. They're watching videos. They have facial recognition in every airport. They know how everybody moves around. They can see when something gets out of whack or someone from the hit or the no-fly list gets into the country. That's the spying is getting done on us.
Yeah, and when you can see how bad CIA operatives and how spies can, how bad it can go and how rogue it can go, that if you know that Osama bin Laden was a CIA operative and a spy for American agencies, well, he must have been dropped somewhere and they must have just went radio silence on him and he was probably like, you know what? You're going to leave me here? Well, okay, then I'm going to start my own coup, my own spies. Then I'm going to use the things that you taught me, just like Washington did to his people that he was taught from, you know, being brought up British or whoever taught him. Must have been just one isolated incident because if he was taught those tactics and he taught it to our American people, how did none of the other British people know it? You know, I mean, it must have been like a, maybe it was like a family secret of spy tactics, you know?
Osama was definitely...
I mean, not just Osama. I mean, like Washington.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just using Osama as an example. But like Washington, he trained them with those special tactics, spy tactics, so that they would be safe and they would go undetected. It's like, well, he was British. So who taught him? It must not have been somebody in the British military. Maybe it was like a thief or somebody, you know, because they could never pick up on it.
Do you still hear about spies getting poisoned? You know, every once in a while, I can remember one probably within the last 10 years where some guy had radioactive like disease, like somebody poisoned him with something radioactive.
Right.
That was a Russian deal or something.
My dad was a world history teacher, as you know. Maybe the listeners didn't, but he was telling me about during World War II, we kept sending a bunch of spies into Germany, into occupied territories. And they kept getting captured and kept getting killed. And the American forces, we couldn't figure out why. So finally they decided, okay, well, we're going to get somebody that used to be with the German and the Nazi party. Bring him over here. We're going to set our spies in a room. And he can just observe them for the day and tell us what's going wrong. So he was like, okay, so before we do that, you know, it was courtesy that they would take him and they would have a meal. So they had a meal, and when the meal was over, the guy turned to the general and said, I know what's wrong. And he said, well, we didn't even do the thing. He said, you don't need to. He said, these guys are cutting their food with the wrong hand. He was like, they're going to pick up on that instantly, and that's how they're getting caught. They taught them how to cut their meat a different way, just like the Nazis. No more of our spies were caught.
That's fantastic. That yeah. little thing.
Just that little thing, yeah.
That little subtlety where they, you know... That person doesn't belong.
You yeah, and he just had that person. Guy just like, there it is. I see it. I wouldn't, because he picked up on it, you know? So, bang, you know, those guys that are on edge looking for those spies are just like, so,
you know, spying is kind of like being the rat in the mafia, playing both sides of the field.
Yeah.
And we've definitely seen our share of mafia movies and paid our attention to that, but...
Well, how about the big Irish mobster? I mean, he was playing both sides. He worked for the FBI, was the informant for them, and said that he could still convict. And he was just recently caught in his 90s, Bulger.
Yes. Or it was Whitey.
Whitey Bulger?
Yeah, let me think about it.
I think it's Whitey Bulger.
But it was like, he was like 84 or something.
Yeah, he was on the run for that long.
And they picked him up in Florida, brought him to jail, and then he got whacked in jail.
Yeah. Which was the whole reason he was on the run, because he knew, just like they would say in Goodfellas, they can get me in here just as easily as they can out there. Ask Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, exactly.
He was in protective custody in suicide watch, and they got him.
Yeah, Epstein, there was no running for him.
No, there's not. Time has run out. I was reading something the other day that says, do you know anybody else besides the Clintons that have 56 friends that have committed suicide?
Did you see the list? It was amazing.
Unbelievable.
I read the list. I read the partial list to my wife, and I was reading the descriptions afterwards of how they died or what was their deal. And
right.
It's so long.
It is. And I'll tell you one thing.
Oh, and the personal bodyguards that got killed.
Yeah.
There was like 11 of them.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Man, if we could only ask the guys that committed suicide by shooting themselves in the back of the head.
Twice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just, don't cross those Clintons, boy.
It reminds you of House of Cards, but for real life.
Yeah, I mean, it's going down. I mean,
there's always a part where art mimics real life and real life mimics art, and that show kind of hits the nail on the head even before it came to light. I mean, right. Epstein is like the cherry on top. He was about to name Bill Clinton on some serious charges that would have put him away for the rest of his life, and then somehow ends up murdered while he's on suicide watch in a federal prison.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get any more inside deep state than that. I mean,
billionaire financier Epstein.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'll tell you what, I mean, politics aside, I think Bill Clinton might be going down for this one.
I don't know, man.
I know.
I mean.
But he might.
He could.
He could.
That would trash the Clinton's name. It'd be like Cosby.
But they need
Bill Cosby.
Yeah, but they need another witness now.
Or Paterno.
Yeah.
Paterno got the raw deal on that one.
Well, I don't know. It was
Sandusky.
Definitely said, well, we'll save this for another show, because that's just going to get us spun off into a whole another direction. But yeah, so we'll wrap up by saying the government has been doing crazy and weird things for a long, long time. Back
since
then,
since
the beginning, it was the Revolutionary War. Yeah, luckily it was won with those tactics. But somebody was like, we don't need to be using those tactics for good anymore.
Right.
So that's our show on the Culper Ring. Hope that you enjoyed it. Me and Steve had fun putting it together and researching it for you.
I did have fun with that one.
And we got some fire shows coming up here. We got like 10 in the hopper right now that we're working on. So we're looking forward to it. And until next time, I'm Foltz.
And I'm Steve.
And we'll see you next time. Take care of one another. Bye-bye.